And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show, coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. The most haunted city in the country. Well, it's been an interesting run. Today's July 7th. 188th day of the year. 177 days remain till the year's over with. On this day in history, in 1124, the city of Tyre falls to the Venetian Crusade after a siege of 19 weeks. 1456, retrial verdict acquits Joan of Arc of heresy 25 years after she allegedly died. There is evidence that, in fact, her death was faked and she was smuggled out of the country. Came back some time later and actually married one of those members of the nobility that she had led. 1520, Spanish conquistadors defeat a larger Aztec army at the Battle of Otumba. 1534, Jacques Cartier makes his first contact with Aboriginal people in what's now Canada. 1575, the raid of Redeswires, the last major battle between England and Scotland. 1585, the Treaty of Nemours abolishes tolerance to Protestants in France. Believe the way we tell you to believe or we kill you. 1770, the Battle of Larga between the Russian Empire and the Ottoman Empire takes place. 1777, American forces retreating from Fort Ticonderoga are defeated in the Battle of Hobarton. 1798, as a result of the XYZ affair, the U.S. Congress rescinds the Treaty of Alliance with France, which sparks what's called the Quasi-War. 1807, the XYZ affair was a political and diplomatic episode in 1797 and 98, early in the presidency of John Adams. It involved a confrontation between the U.S. and the Republic of France that led to the Quasi-War. That name derives from the substitution of the letters XYZ for the names of the French diplomats Jean-Conrad Hottinger, Pierre Bellamy, and Lucien Hotevel, and dockets are released by the Adams administration. The American Diplomatic Commission went to France in July of 1797 to negotiate a solution to the problems that were threatening to break into a war. Now, the failure of the commission to actually accomplish anything caused a political firestorm in the U.S. The In 1807, the first Treaty of Tilsit between France and Russia is signed. Ended hostilities between the two countries in the War of the Fourth Coalition. 1834, New York City, four nights of rioting against abolitionists begin. 1846, U.S. troops occupy Monterey and Yerba Buena, which begins the U.S. conquest of California. 1863, the U.S. begins its first military draft. If you want an exemption, it costs you $300, cash money. Credit cards not accepted. 1865, four conspirators in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln are hung. Guilty or not, they were hung. 1892, the Katipunan is established, the discovery of which by Spanish authorities initiated the Philippine Revolution. The Katipunan was a Philippine Revolutionary Society founded by anti-Spanish colonialism Filipinos in Manila in 1892. Primary goal was to gain independence from Spain through a revolution. Now, documents discovered this year suggested the society had been organized as early as January of 1892, but really didn't become active until July 7th of that year. And that was the date that Filipino writer Jose Rizal was to be banished to Dapitan. It was a secret organization Members subjected to the utmost secrecy and expected to abide by the rules established by the society. Aspiring applicants were given standard initiation rites in order to become members. At first, membership was open only to male Filipinos. Later, women were accepted. It had its own magazine called Freedom. It issued its first and last printing in March of 1896. Revolutionary ideals and works flourished within the society. In 1898, U.S. President McKinley signs a Newlands Revolution, a resolution annexing Hawaii as a territory of the U.S. 1907, Florence Ziegfeld Jr. stages first Follies on the roof of the New York Theater in New York City. 1911, the U.S., U.K., Japan, and Russia sign the North Pacific Fur Seal Convention of 1911, banning open water and seal hunting. That was the first international treaty to address wildlife preservation issues. In 1915, the first Battle of the Isonzo comes to an end. Fought between the armies of Italy and Austria-Hungary on the Italian front in World War I. Began June 23, 1915, ended July 7, 1915. The aim of the Italian army was to drive the Austrians away from its defensive positions along the Isonzo and on the nearby mountains. And although the Italians had a 2-to-1 numeric superiority, their offensive failed because the Italian commander, Luigi Cardona, employed frontal assaults after artillery barrages. Austro-Hungarians had the advantage of fighting from uphill positions barricaded with barbed wire. They were able to easily resist the Italian assault. In 1915, Colombo Town Guard Officer Henry Padres is executed in British Ceylon for allegedly inciting persecution of Muslims. 1916, a New Zealand Labour Party is founded in Wellington. 1928, sliced bread is sold for the first time on the inventor's 48th birthday by the Chillicothe Baking Company of Chillicothe, Missouri. 1930, industrious Henry Kaiser begins construction of Boulder Dam, which is now known as Hoover Dam. 1937, the Marco Polo Bridge incident provides the Imperial Japanese Army with a pretext for starting the Second Sino-Japanese War. 1937, the Peel Commission report recommends the partition of Palestine. That was the first formal recommendation for partition in the history of Palestine. 1941, U.S. occupation of Iceland replaces the U.K.'s occupation. 1944, World War II. The largest bonsai charge in the Pacific Wars took place during the Battle of Saipan. 1946, Mother Francesca S. Cabrini becomes the first American to be canonized. 1946, Howard Hughes nearly dies when an XF-11 reconnaissance aircraft prototype crashes in the Beverly Hills neighborhood. 1952, the ocean liner USS United States passes Bishop Rock on her maiden voyage, breaking a transatlantic speed record to become the fastest passenger ship in the world. 1953, Ernesto Che Guevara sets out on a trip through Bolivia, Peru, Ecuador, Panama, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, and El Salvador. Actually, his trip began as an attempt to get him away from Fidel Castro. He was becoming too popular. Eventually, he was killed, supposedly by Bolivian soldiers, but when I was in South America, I was told that it was done by a U.S. Sniper. 1954, Elvis makes his radio debut when WHBQ Memphis played his first recording for Sun Records. That's all right. 1958, President Eisenhower signs the Alaska Statehood Act into law. 1959, Venus occults the star Regulus. This rare event is used to determine the diameter of Venus and the structure of the Venusian atmosphere. No Venusians were hurt in the process. 1963, Buddhist crisis. The police of Ngo Dinh Nu, brother and chief political advisor of President Ngo Dinh Diem, attacked a group of American journalists who were covering a protest. 1978, Solomon Islands becomes independent from the UK. 1980, institution of Sharia law in Iran. 1980, during the Lebanese Civil War, 83 Tiger militants are killed during what will be known as the Safra Massacre. 1981, President Ronald Reagan appoints Sandra Day O'Connor to become the first female member of the Supreme Court of the U.S. I met her. Not exactly what I'd call a leading light. 1983, the Cold War. Samantha Smith, a U.S. schoolgirl, flies to the Soviet Union at the invitation of Secretary General Yuri Andropov. 1985, Boris Becker becomes the youngest player ever to win Wimbledon at age 17. 1991, Yugoslav Wars. The Brioni Agreement ends the 10-day independence war in Slovenia against the rest of the Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. 1992, the New York Court of Appeals rules women have the same rights as men to go topless in public. 1997, the Turkish Armed Forces withdraw from northern Iraq after assisting the Kurdistan Democratic Party in the Iraqi Kurdish Civil War. 2003, NASA Opportunity Rover, MERB, or Mars Exploration Rover B, was launched into space aboard a Delta II rocket. 2005, a series of four explosions occurs on London's transport system, kills 56 people, including four suicide bombers, and injures over 700 others. I still don't see the logic of a suicide bombing. 2007, the first live Earth benefit concerts held in 11 locations around the world. And what did it accomplish? Nothing. 2012, at least 172 people were killed in a flash flood in the Krasnodar Krai region of Russia. 2013, a Havilland Otter air taxi crashes in Saldanha, Alaska, kills 10. 2016, ex-U.S. Army soldier Micah Xavier Johnson shoots 14 policemen during an anti-police protest in downtown Dallas, Texas. He killed five. He's subsequently killed by a robot-delivered bomb. 2019, the United States women's national soccer team defeated the Netherlands 2-0 at the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup final in Lyon, France. Let's see what else we got. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Far too many to go into. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, the Burr of Ferrimaltiers, Felix of Nantes, Elidius, Java Manyava, in the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, Willibald in the Catholic Church, Independence Day, celebrates independence of the Solomon Islands from the UK in 1978, Ivan Kupala Day in Belarus, Poland, Russia, and Ukraine. Saba Saba Day in Tanzania. Tanabata Day in Japan. And World Chocolate Day. Let's see what else we might have. In 1520, the Battle of Tumba, Mexico. Hernan Cortez and the Tlaxcalans defeat a numerically superior Aztec force. 1947, the alleged and disputed Roswell UFO incident. Until I became politically unacceptable to Don Smith, I spoke there every year for 10 years. He was unhappy that I outsold him 3-1 on book sales because he was a star. 2005, coordinating terrorist bombing blast strike London's public transport system during the morning rush hour. 2005, influenced by global Live 8 concerts, G8 leaders pledged to double 2004 levels of aid to Africa from 25 to 50 billion by the year 2010. We made a lot of despots very wealthy with that. Okay. Okay, let's see. That was bizarre. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 2, the final film adaptation of Rowling's popular children's book series, had its world premiere in London on this date. 1978, Czech-born tennis player Martina Navratilova defeated Chris Evert to win her first of 9 Wimbledon single titles. I knew Chris Evert's uncle. He's an attorney. Quite an arrogant individual. In 1906, Satchel Paige, a professional baseball pitcher who earned a legendary fame during his years with the Negro Leagues, is believed to have been born this day in Mobile, Alabama. 1770, a Russian fleet destroyed an Ottoman fleet in the Battle of Chesme on the Aegean Sea. 1438, King Charles VII of France issued the Pragmatic Sanction of Bourges, restricts the rights of the Pope, and in many cases makes the Pope jurisdiction subject to the will of the King. You know, at one point in time, the Pope ruled his own country, had an army. 1307, King Edward I of England died on his way to subdue the new Scottish king, Robert the Bruce. 1497, Vasco da Gama sailed from Lisbon with a fleet of 4 vessels, opened a sea route from Western Europe to Asia by way of the Cape of Good Hope, which of course ushered in a new era in world history. 2011, the orbiter Atlantis was launched on the last space shuttle mission. In 1950, Douglas MacArthur appointed commander of United Nations forces in the Korean War. 1896, William Jennings Bryan delivered his Cross of Gold speech at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. 1889, journalist Charles Henry Dow published the first issue of the Wall Street Journal. 1889, John L. Sullivan beat Jake Killerain in 75 rounds to defend his title in the last heavyweight championship bout held under the London prize ring rules. 1833, the Treaty of Hunkar-Iskalesi, a defensive alliance between the Ottoman Empire and Russia, was signed at the village of Hunkar-Iskalesi near Istanbul. 1815, Louis XVIII returned to Paris following the Hundred Days. On this day in 1762, Catherine the Great overthrew Peter III in 1762 and began her reign as Empress of Russia. Led her country to full participation in the political and cultural life of Europe and extended Russian territory. In 2019, American businessman and politician Ross Perot, Mr. Ears, ran for U.S. president as an independent in 1992. He got 19% of the popular vote. He died on this day in 2019 at the age of 89. 2011, South Sudan declared its independence after referendums succeed from Sudan. That referendum passed overwhelmingly. 2002, fearing there wouldn't be enough eligible players to continue, Major League Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig stopped the annual All-Star Game in the 11th inning with the score tied 7-7. 2001, the British TV series The Office, created and written by Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant, debuted on this date, became a huge hit, spawned a popular American version, made Gervais a star. He's one of the few Hollywoodites who has not been bitten with the woke virus. 1960, the Thresher, first of a class of U.S. nuclear-powered attack submarines, was launched on this date. It sank in 1963, on the worst submarine accident in history. Let's see if there's anything else. 1856, Nikola Tesla, Serbian American inventor and researcher, discovered a rotating magnetic field, the basis for most alternating current machinery, is born on this day in Smiljan, Croatia. 1850, Zachary Taylor, 12th president of the U.S., died 16 months after taking office. He died on this date. 1816, the Congress of Tucumán declared Argentina's independence from Spain. 1755, General Braddock's British army was thoroughly defeated in the Battle of the Monongahela during the French and Indian War on this date. 1540, the marriage of King Henry VIII of England and his fourth wife, Anne of Cleves, was annulled on this date. 1, the first communication satellite to transmit live television signals and telephone conversations across the Atlantic, was launched on this date in 1962. Well, to give credit where credit is due, I want to make the comment that the Congresswoman Escobar is the best congresswoman Mexico has ever had. It was in the paper today that she is arranging for workers at the maquiladoras in Mexico to get the COVID-19 vaccinations. She's not doing any of that for disabled veterans, but disabled veterans really don't count, which is something that needs to be looked at. You know, there's been a lot of activity, I guess you could say, about the Roswell incident. It was a 1947 crash of what the government says was a United States Army Air Force's balloon at a ranch near Roswell. Now, those who were on the scene claim the crash involved a flying saucer, and the truth was covered up by the United States government. In fact, July 8, 1947, Roswell Army Airfield issued a press release stating they had recovered a flying disc from a ranch near Roswell. But as soon as the powers that be got involved, that statement was retracted, and they said the people on the scene were too dumb to know what a weather balloon looked like. Now, everything quickly moved off the pages of the newspapers. Until the late 1970s, when a retired lieutenant colonel, in an interview with a researcher of unidentified flying objects, alleged the weather balloon account had been a cover story. Ufologists began promoting a variety of elaborate conspiracy theories, claiming that one or more alien spacecraft crash-landed and the extraterrestrial occupants had been recovered by the military, and a cover-up was immediately put in place. Now, if you look at a map showing where all the radar trucks were, that the whatever crashed came right down a corridor. And it turns out that using microwaves, just as a microwave oven cooks what's inside it, the occupants of this flying disc were basically cooked. And the descriptions of the occupants that were given by those who were on the scene, and there were quite a number of people who showed up who were in that general area, it makes it appear that the occupants had in fact been cooked. 1994, the Air Force, trying to keep the cover-up going, published a report identifying the crashed object as a nuclear test surveillance balloon from Project Mogul. And a second Air Force report published in 1997 said the stories of alien bodies probably stem from test dummies being dropped from high altitude. The problem is that you don't know, you know, our government has a tendency to classify anything and everything until higher authorities come in and decide what should be released. In 1947, we were the most powerful country in the world. But if, in fact, these UFOs were real, we couldn't control what flew in our airspace. They were totally terrified. The populace would panic. Now, the Roswell incident occurred during the flying saucer craze of 1947. June 26th, media nationwide had reported civilian pilot Kenneth Arnold's story of seeing what he called flying saucers. Historians later chronicled over 800 copycat sightings reported after the Arnold story was published. Now, the Roswell incident began when William Mac Brazil, a ranch foreman, noticed clusters of debris on the Foster Ranch, about 30 miles outside of Roswell. Initial press coverage suggested Brazil first noticed the material in early July, though later reports suggested a June date for the discovery of debris. Sometime around July 6th, Brazil reported a discovery to Sheriff George Wilcox in Roswell. Wilcox, in turn, called Major Jesse Marcel at the Roswell Army Air Force Base. And Marcel assembled a detail to visit the Foster Ranch. About 4 p.m. that afternoon, Brazil left Roswell, followed by Marcel, Lieutenant Colonel Sheridan Cavett, and Master Sergeant Bill Rickett. Next morning, July 7th, the Army Air Force detail inspected the debris on the Foster Ranch and transported some of the Oliver back to Roswell. In fact, according to Jesse Marcel's son, who I knew, his father loaded the sedan he was driving with all that material. And in fact, that night, the son was allowed to inspect it. Now, Walter Hout, the public affairs officer at the Roswell Army Air Force Base, issued a press release stating personnel from the field, 509th Operations Group, recovered a flying disc. And, of course, news outlets picked it up. Now, if, in fact, this whole thing was a hoax, you would think the officers and men involved in perpetuating that hoax would have had their careers impacted, since the military career is a very political animal. But instead, they were all promoted. Now, according to a number of researchers, even after the press release was issued, the idea of alien spacecraft hadn't gained hold yet. At best, concern was there were physical craft, that if they were physical craft, they were probably Soviet or maybe Nazi. Now, Colonel Blanchard, William H. Blanchard, commanding officer of the 509th, and 509th was the only unit that had ever used nuclear weapons. Blanchard contacted General Rainey of the 8th Air Force, Fort Worth, Texas, and Rainey ordered the object to be flown to Fort Worth Army Airfield. At the base, Warrant Officer Irving Newton confirmed Rainey's preliminary opinion, identifying the object as being a weather balloon and the kite attached to it. That was the nickname for a radar reflector used to track the balloons from the ground. Now, a telex sent to a FBI office from the Fort Worth, Texas office quoted a major in the 8th Air Force, saying the disc is hexagonal in shape and was suspended from a balloon by a cable. However, I've seen documents that were released from the FBI where J. Edgar Hoover himself talked about the fact that the FBI was refused the opportunity to inspect the crash disk. And he was just beside himself. Now, after the initial newspaper reports from 1947, the Roswell incident faded from public attention. And there is a lot of evidence to support the fact that what was flown to Fort Worth was replaced with the remains of a crashed weather balloon. In one of the pictures where General Ramey is kneeling by the crash material, he's got a document in his hand, and that document has been enhanced, and it talks about crashed flying saucers. Stanton Friedman, who I knew fairly well, interviewed Jesse Marcel, the only person known to have accompanied the Roswell debris from where it was recovered to Fort Worth, where a reporter saw material that was claimed to be part of the recovered object. November 1979, Marcel's first filmed interview was featured in a documentary entitled UFOs Are Real, which Stanton Friedman co-wrote. Now, that film had a limited release, but was later syndicated for broadcast. February 28, 1980, the National Enquirer brought large-scale attention to Marcel's story. And Marcel made the statement, they wanted some comment from me, but I wasn't at liberty to do so. I was told to keep my mouth shut. And General Raby's the one who discussed what it was, and Marcel was told very directly he was to forget what he knew about it. Now, Marcel said we all knew that it wasn't a weather balloon, but that's what we were told to say. Now, the accounts given by Friedman and others in the following years elevated Roswell from a forgotten incident to maybe the most famous UFO case of all time. Now, Marcel gave a final interview to HBO's America Undercover. And in it, he consistently denied the presence of bodies. And of course, in all things UFO, you're going to see involvement of a man named Donald Smith. He is the one that if you outsell him, you can't come back. Because he is a god. Now, in October of 1980, Marcel's story was featured in the book The Roswell Incident by Charles Berlitz and William Moore. And they'd written a number of books on such fringe topics as the Philadelphia Experiment of the Bermuda Triangle. And Stanton Friedman did carry out some of the research for that book. According to The Roswell Incident, an alien craft was flying over the New Mexico desert observing U.S. nuclear weapons activity. It was either brought down by microwave or lightning, depending on which version of the story you believe, and the aliens on board were killed. And, of course, a government cover-up followed. The narrative in the book has become known as Version 1 of the Roswell Myth. Now, the Roswell incident featured accounts of debris described by Marcel as nothing made on this earth. Additional accounts by Bill Brazil, son of rancher Mac Brazil, neighbor Floyd Proctor, and Walt Whitman Jr., son of newsman W.E. Whitman, who had interviewed Mac Brazil, suggested the material Marcel recovered had super strength not associated with a weather balloon. Now, the Roswell Incident book was the first book to introduce the controversial secondhand stories of civil engineer Grady Barnett and a group of archaeology students from an unidentified university who encountered the wreckage and the so-called alien bodies while on the plain of St. Augustine, before being escorted away by the army. The Barnett stories were described by ufologists as one aspect of the account that seemed to conflict with the basic story about the retrieval of unusual debris from a sheep ranch outside Corona, New Mexico. Now, if we ever get it on the air, I did a lot of research into UFO crashes, and I came out with a book called Beyond Roswell. We've filmed the first season of what we hoped will be a long-running television series. just waiting for it to go live. Now, many allege first-hand accounts of the Roswell incident actually came in information from the Aztec New Mexico crash. Now, it's been referred to by many people as a hoax flying saucer crash that was promoted by journalist Frank Scully. However, my research showed it wasn't a hoax. The hoax gained ground after the military got involved. They didn't want any discussions about it. Now, in 1991, Kevin Randall, who I know, and Don Smith, who, well, I'm not going to say any more about him, published UFO Crash at Roswell. Okay. According to Randall and Smith in their book, General Arthur Axon had been directly aware of debris and body, but he disputed it, saying his comments had been based exclusively on secondhand rumors. Now, the book sold 160,000 copies and became the basis of the 1994 television film Roswell. And in 1991, retired U.S. Air Force Brigadier General Thomas DuBois, who had posed with debris for press photographs in 1947, publicly acknowledged the weather balloon was a cover story. He corroborated Marcel's previous admissions. Now, the alien body accounts were mentioned in the 1991 book by Kevin Randall, although the dates and locations were changed from the accounts found in the Charles Berlitz's Roswell incident. According to the account, Brazil was described as leading the army to a second crash site on the ranch, at which point the army personnel were horrified to find civilians already there. That was the archaeological group from the university. Then the UFO crash at Roswell, the 1991 book, featured the stories of mortician Glenn Dennis. On September 20th, 1989, an episode of Unsolved Mysteries included secondhand stories of Barnett sealing alien bodies captured by the Army. Mortician Dennis called the show's hotline, claiming he knew things about that event. He said he had gotten four or five calls from the airbase with questions about body preservation and injuries. He said he was also asked about smaller hermetically sealed caskets. He also stated that a local nurse at the facility at the Roswell Army Air Force Base told him she'd witnessed an alien autopsy. Dennis's stories of the Roswell alien autopsies was the first account to allege alien corpses at the military base. But of course, those that want to dismiss it or keep the cover-up going, unless an alien walked up, tapped him on the shoulder, and said, "Hey, I'm here," they wouldn't believe it took place. Now, in 1992, Stanton Friedman wrote a book called Crash at Corona. The book introduced new witnesses and added to the narrative by doubling the number of flying saucers to two and the number of aliens to eight. Two of which were said to have survived and been taken into custody by the government. 1994, Randall and the inimitable Don Smith authored another book, The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell, which included a claim alien bodies were taken by a cargo plane to be viewed by Dwight Eisenhower, who was president. The existence of so many different accounts led to a disagreement among ufologists about the events that took place at Roswell. The Center for UFO Studies and the Mutual UFO Network, two leading UFO societies, disagreed in their views on the various scenarios. One issue under discussion was whether where Barnett was when he saw the alien craft he was said to have encountered. The problem is, when people are talking from things they have witnessed, memory is not always 100%, and there can be misstatements. And those who want to discount the stories jump on any differing statement to discredit the entire story. After the United States congressional inquiries, the General Accounting Office launched an inquiry and directed the Office of the U.S. Secretary of the Air Force to conduct an internal investigation. And the result was summarized in two reports. Now, since the government has a vested interest in keeping a lid on this, the first report, released in 94, concluded the material recovered in 47 was likely debris from Project Mogul. The second report, released in 97, concluded reports of recovered alien bodies was a combination of innocently transformed memories of accidents. We got Monday morning quarterbacking to discount the statements of people who were there at the time. In the 1990s, a consensus emerged concluding the military decided to conceal the true purpose of the crash devices and informed the public the crash was a weather balloon. Now, a balloon had been launched from Alamogordo Army Airfield a month before. Cleared a radar reflector and classified Project Mogul sensors. They were trying to investigate Soviet nuclear testing. So if, in fact, a UFO crashed, this would be a perfect cover story. Air Force reports are dismissed by UFO proponents as being either disinformation or simply implausible, though people who make their fortunes based upon poo-pooing anything, such as Phil Klass and Robert Todd, they expressed doubts regarding accounts of aliens for several years, used the reports as the basis for skeptical responses to claim by UFO proponents. Then in 1995, film footage that purported to show an alien autopsy and claimed to have been taken by a military official shortly after the Roswell incident was released by Ray Santill, London-based video entrepreneur. That footage caused an international sensation when it aired on television around the world. Now, he admitted, supposedly, in 2006, the film was mostly a reconstruction, but he claimed it was based on general footage that was now lost. Some original frames had survived. In 1997, former Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso reported in his book, The Day After Roswell, the Roswell crash did happen. And when he was assigned to Fort Riley, Kansas in July of 47, a sergeant showed him purportedly non-human bodies from an aircraft. And he claimed that years later, he helped oversee a project to reverse engineer recovered crash debris. Now, of course, Phil Klass analyzed his claims line by line and said there were errors, so it couldn't be true. Corso's story was noted for its similarities to the film Terminator 2 that had been released 6 years before. And in 2007, I'm Just Wonderful, Don Smith and Tom Carey, who's a nice guy, published the book Witness to Roswell, which featured a document said to be a sworn affidavit by Walter Hout, who'd written the First Army press release about the Roswell crash in 47. That document, alleged to have been left by Hout and opened only after his death in 2005, included a description of the 47 crash debris as having been discussed by high-ranking staff, and it said in the document he had seen the actual alien bodies himself. Those claims got an unimpressed response, even from ufologists. Dennis Balthasar said the document had been written by Hout, and by 2000, Hout's mental state was such he couldn't recall basic details about his own past, making the details contained in the affidavits dubious. On October 26, 2007, Bill Richardson, who at the time was a president for the Democratic Party nomination was a candidate for the Democratic Party nomination for president, was asked about releasing government files on Roswell. He said when he was a congressman, he tried to get information on behalf of his New Mexico constituents. He was told by both the Department of Defense and Los Alamos Labs that information was classified still. In 2011, American journalist Ann Jacobson's Area 51, The Uncensored History of America's Top Secret Military Base, featured a claim that Joseph Mengele, German SS officer in the Doctor in Auschwitz was recruited by Soviet leader Stalin to produce grotesque child-sized aviators to be remotely piloted and land in America in order to cause hysteria similar to the War of the Worlds upset Orson Welles created. Of course, immediately her book was jumped on by the Federation of American Scientists. Historian Richard Rhodes, writing in the Washington Post, criticized the book's sensationalistic reporting of old news and its error-ridden reporting. He said all of her main sources' claims appeared in one or another of the various publicly available Roswell Area 51 books. In attributing the story, she reports to an unnamed engineer and Manhattan Project veteran, while seemingly failing to conduct even minimal research into the man's sources. It was said that she showed herself to be gullible. You know, there are people whose careers are based on debunking anything that doesn't meet with the government's main line. Though I will say in the last couple of years, even the U.S. government has begun to release more and more information about UFO encounters between UFOs and military personnel. Well, I have not yet been released for full activity by medical personnel as after the surgery that took place on my throat, and I'm starting to feel the effects. So we're going to cut it off here, and I'll be giving you more information about UFOs and aliens and over the next few shows. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.